In today's video, we're going to talk about preparedness, but not necessarily a physical kind of preparedness, more of a mental resilience-based preparedness. And I personally find the best way to do this, I actually have an exercise that I do, where I always look at the worst case scenario of what could happen. And once I've gone through that in my mind, then I know what the worries are, what the stresses are, and I can sort of put that to the side. Because you'll notice that I haven't been talking a lot about the Russia and Ukraine conflict as much as I was at the beginning, or at least the first 6 months or so. Why is that, first of all? Well, it's because I'm noticing that just by even talking about it, it creates a huge amount of division, not just among subscribers like yourself, but in the community at large. And you'll notice this when you're out on the street or in your communities, where many of you will have differing views on everything that's going on there, or in particular, maybe micro pockets of events that might take place. Whereas in today's video, I don't really want to get into any of that. I want to just give you an update on the crucial things that you need to know about that conflict so that you don't have to keep getting distracted by it every day with the news reports and articles coming out. Because again, I'm speaking to a lot of people on a day-to-day basis who are getting more and more crippled by fear every single day as it goes by, especially with the nuclear aspect. Now, we actually looked at the nuclear risk aspect last week on the Global Risk Report, which tends to be fairly accurate. Now, that's interesting because it's an indirect conflict here with the doomsday clock, which is now at the highest point, 90 seconds to midnight, that it has ever been since it was first created. One of the creators of that was Albert Einstein, as you know, very intelligent gentleman there. So we are having these conflicting reports, and I'm going to go into a few articles today and then just share what I think is really going on here and what you do need to worry about and what you really don't need to worry about. But the first thing I want to share is I'm going to show you a clip of something that I don't think most people are even aware that is going on right now. And this involves Western troops, UK, USA, NATO troops, just 80 miles from the Russian border. Doesn't seem to be reported on a lot, but we're going to talk about that and talk about the escalations that I see coming here. And the reason I'm sharing this on the channel today, where mainly I tend to focus on the finance and economic side, is because I do think this is important. I do think it's important that you're aware of these things and you are prepared for certain events, which I believe are going to transpire. And it's only really through mentally preparing for these events that you're going to be able to get through it with clarity. If you think about when shock events occur, this is when people's logic and rationale just goes completely out the window, combined with, depending on what media source they look at, actually listening to that bias and then absorbing it. So I'm going to try in this video to be as unbiased as possible. I'm also not going to jump in with my personal opinions like I used to do. I'm going to try and keep it in a more neutral way so that you can form your own opinions on it. So let's get started with the first of the articles here. And this has come out in the last week. So this is the United Nations Secretary General. And he's warning of a wider war coming out of the Russia and Ukraine conflict. And I would actually agree with his statement here. So what did he actually say then? In discussing these threats to global stability, so this is the UN side of things report. It's completely different to the Global Risk Report that we looked at last week. He touched on his fears of continuing escalation in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, warning it could bring the rest of the world into a much broader global conflict. Now, do we have any evidence of that? That is the question. And the answer is yes, we do. Cold War inside terrifying World War I style trench warfare training as British troops prepare for battle on Putin's doorstep in minus 12 degrees Celsius freeze, which is pretty darn cold, I will say. That's in Celsius, not Fahrenheit. So these war games took place just 80 miles from the Russian border, and they used a whole range of weaponry here, right through to the most lethal tanks and high-tech weapons. So we had NATO forces. This was took place in Estonia. So you see the vital significance and importance of Estonia here. We also had the battle tanks involved in this. And we have these trenches. So this was a trench warfare scenario. Now, who was involved in this? Which troops? Well, Estonia, Britain. So this is British troops, France, Denmark, and the United States. So this is America taking part in this. And there's a lot of pictures that you can look through. A picture paints a thousand words, of course. But here is a team of British Royal Engineers practice firing from tanks during the drill. So we have a lot of images there of these exercises and what's taking place. Now, let me ask you the question. Why do exercises take place? If you are ex-military, like myself, I was in the army, why do these exercises take place? In fact, I was always part of teams planning certain aspects of exercises. So to me, this is, I know this stuff like the back of my hand. And the answer is, the reason that exercises take place is because you exercise based on where you believe the conflict is coming. So we look at this evidence here. We look at the chief of the defense staff as well last year in his speech, which I made a video on, and he talked about Operation Mobilize. You can look this up. This is an actual operation, and it involves not just the military, but the reservists and the civilians. So we know roughly what Operation Mobilize involves from a British point of view. But if you look at other NATO countries and you look at the US as well and Canada, you see that there are similar operations that exist from an administrative point of view. So what does that mean? Well, it means that they are not at the phase yet of actual boots on the ground doing things. So there's no training of civilians in the UK that I'm aware of, but there will be training at the phase one aspect, which is what we're seeing. And this is not a new thing. These exercises take place all the time. So I'm not saying that this is a brand new exercise on the Russian border with US, British, NATO troops because they want to go in. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that they're obviously training there and doing that kind of exercise for a reason. And it isn't too difficult to figure out what that reason is. My view is if they were going to de-escalate this, our illustrious leaders here, if they were going to de-escalate from Russia to Ukraine to NATO to, you know, all the other countries involved, I think they would have done by now. It's a year into the conflict, and we're not seeing a de-escalation, we're actually seeing an escalation. In fact, let's look at that now. The UK is to train Ukrainian pilots, marines, and supply longer range weapons to Kyiv. So here's a statement. I'm proud today that we will expand that training from soldiers to marines and fighter jet pilots, ensuring Ukraine has a military able to defend its interests well into the future. This comes from Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister of the UK. It also underlines our commitment to not just, again, I'm highlighting it here, not just provide military equipment for the short term, but a long-term pledge to stand shoulder to shoulder. We've heard this terminology many times before in history, and we know what it means. Standing shoulder to shoulder with Ukraine for years to come. So again, we know how long this conflict is going to go on for. This statement indicates that the West may eventually supply Ukraine with F-16 fighter jets. However, so far, Western countries have refused to deliver F-16s to Ukraine. Well, yes, but they also refused to deliver weapons and ammunition at the start. They also refused to then provide more heavy weapons. They also refused to supply javelins and other anti-tank missiles. They also refused to supply artillery and other such heavy weaponry. They also refused to supply battle tanks. And now we have Challenger 2s and Leopards and Abrams and all sorts of other things. So just because they're saying they're not going to provide F-16s and long-range missiles, well, I think this only stands right now. Remember, all things are temporary. Things move very, very slowly and then very quickly. And these are how these things escalate. And it was very similar with other conflicts that we've seen, such as Iraq, where we were told at first it was just this, it was just that. oh, it's advisors, then it's this, then it's that. Next thing you know, there's a full-scale war, and there's, you know, WMDs, which, again, never really transpired. And it also doesn't help now that there are a lot of mercenary organizations that are on the ground. And you've got to remember that mercenaries sit kind of outside of international law, but at the same time, they sit inside the law. It's a really sort of gray area in some respects. But we know that there's a lot of mercenaries on the ground. And if you look at where you keep hearing about war crimes in the media, I mean, I can't confirm this, but I'm pretty sure that if you look into where these war crimes are committed, they may not be the professional military. I mean, they could be. I'm not saying they're not. But it's a lot more likely that they'll be taking place with some of the mercenary groups involved. And if you don't think that the UK is cozy with Ukraine on all of this, you only need to look at this picture here. The Prime Minister said that Britain was hoping to lead the world by approving the delivery of weapons that could put Russian territory within range. This is an obvious escalation of the conflict. It is only going to make it worse if Ukraine starts firing missiles into Russia. Again, I'm not passing any comment on that. That is up to you for your own views on it. But my opinion is that it will only escalate this conflict. During the visit to the army base in Dorset, so this is Zelensky visited the UK, the pair met with soldiers receiving training in Britain on Challenger 2 tanks before Zelensky awarded medals to Ukrainian troops. Sunak said the Challenger 2 tanks would be on the front line in a matter of weeks in anticipation of a Russian offensive, which is expected to take place in the spring. Another thing he said, we will be there until the end and you are victorious. Now, just another comment I want to pass on these tanks then, because I'm seeing a lot of political commentators and all sorts of other experts and gurus on this. And again, remember, I just apply logic and common sense. And I think that's why most of you watch me on this channel. You don't think I'm a health guru, genius, or a military tactician or something like that. You just see that I look at things logically and then give my opinion on what I think is most likely to happen. And you only have to look at my accurate forecast list to see that a lot of things I do talk about, again, just applying common sense and timelines and logic, do tend to come about. So it is worrying when we get into videos like this. But the point I wanted to make, therefore I went off on a tangent, was that these Challenger 2 tanks, and the pundits are saying it's going to make a big difference and turn the war around and things like that, I just don't see that at all. I don't see the small amount of tanks being sent as big enough to make much of a dent in this conflict. All I see is the negative side of it, which is that it pushes it into a new realm of the conflict. Whereas before, you've got troops on the ground and you're fighting with rifles and other artillery. And yes, there's some tanks and things involved. But now what you're seeing is it's escalating to a new level. And where does this end? This is the question. You escalate from tanks to aircraft to long-range missiles. Where it ends is, in my opinion, tactical nukes. And I say in my opinion because on the risk report last week, it was just a tiny, tiny little circle compared to some of those other circles. So it makes me wonder if the WEF, being so accurate in their predictions, if they know something that we don't know. Because this is how, look at how World War II really came to an end between the US and Japan. And do you honestly think that this isn't going to happen again? Now, I'm not saying huge nukes, but we'll come on to that in a second, because there are some pretty huge nukes being put on display at the moment. But I do think things like a tactical nuke are a lot more likely. But let's move on to that, because this came out last week, so 8 days ago now. Russia prepares a large-scale offensive in the next 10 days. Well, I don't think we need to go over all the things on this, because what did we... In fact, one point I will mention, that this one looks to be slightly different in terms of the offensive, because these are proper mechanized brigades. They're reinforced with airborne and marine units. So if you know much about the military, your airborne and marines tend to be your toughest soldiers. These are not bus drivers and school teachers, he said. Because just yesterday then, this new article came out about Russian forces bombing the region, the NATO chief says. And again, let me point you in the direction of this. The Russian assault has been spearheaded by mercenaries of the Wagner group, who have made small but steady gains. And this is why I think this conflict is a little different from other conflicts we've seen, because it is being spearheaded, if this is accurate, by mercenaries, or what you may call soldiers of fortune. So we've seen a lot of escalations all over the place. The US Air Force tested a nuclear missile just a few months ago in September. Now, we also had this from the Economic Times. They claim the Moldovan government completely collapsed after a missile was fired over its region. We then had this, which was a very interesting video to watch, North Korea showcasing their nuclear capability. I mean, these things are enormous, and I think they claim to have 14 of them. So I'm seeing a lot of people commenting on these, and that, you know, if there are 10 to 14 of them, and they can overwhelm US defenses and all these other things, that there's no real hope. Well, the other thing you have to look at here is that I think North Korea build this kind of stuff more out of fear than they do out of wanting to conquer the world. But just because someone does something out of fear, it doesn't mean that they won't sort of ally with another organization or another country. So that is what you could see with maybe Russia. Maybe you could see that with the BRICS nations. It's hard to say. But the other aspect that I don't really see many people talking about is, how do we actually know that those things work? And even if they work, are they actually going to get all the way over to wherever their target is? They seem to talk, most of the rhetoric is about the US. They really don't like the USA. And of course, the doomsday clock being 90 seconds to midnight doesn't help in easing a lot of people's fears around this whole event. The other thing I wanted to talk about is this whole situation with the spy balloon. In fact, I don't even need the screen share, because I know most of this stuff now after reading about it and watching the videos. The whole thing is crazy. I'm sure you agree if you've been following this. The whole thing is crazy. It's extremely weird that now it's transpiring that the president even knew about these balloons a long way back. They knew that they had traveled all the way across the US, and they just allowed them to because they didn't want to shoot them down and cause damage or in danger. It could land on someone and kill them. To me, this sounds a little strange, a bit of a smokescreen, especially if you look at the path of where it went over some areas. There's just nothing there. It's desert and lakes and all sorts of other things. I'm sure they could have taken these things down if they really wanted to. And the fact that there's loads of these things all over the place, and that they didn't get shot down because they didn't want to anger and create more tension with China. Again, I don't buy into that story, because if you don't want to cause tension with China, why do you fly Nancy Pelosi over to Taiwan? Why is this new guy flying over to Taiwan shortly? You don't think that causes tension? But even more amusing to me is that China's actually said they want their balloons back, and they're really upset that the US shot them down. Hold on, you're flying balloons over another person's country. You're in their sovereignty, their airspace, and then you get angry because they shot your balloons down. It doesn't make any sense. Now there's all these new reports about UFOs. 3 out of 4 UFOs have been shot down. They still can't figure them out. And one guy thinks, one guy in the Pentagon thinks they're aliens. And the whole thing is getting weird. I'm sure you're just as baffled by this whole thing as I am. I don't know what to make of it. Maybe there's something else going on, and this is just a smokescreen. That's usually most likely in these kind of events. So I'm not really buying into this whole story at the moment. I need to see a little bit more, find out a little bit more on it, and then I can have a more broad view. But right now, I think it must be a smokescreen for something else. But I don't want to leave you with this video just sat there going, oh gosh, the whole world's going to end. We're going to have a nuclear Armageddon and things like that. Because actually, like I said at the beginning, what I do is I just go through this exercise in my mind, more of a mental exercise. And you can do this as well for a lot of things. What is the worst that can possibly happen? But then what is more realistically going to happen? Well, if there is this massive nuclear exchange, there's no point you worrying about it because you cannot do anything about it anyway. It's completely out of your hands. So what can you do? What is in your hands? This is what you should focus on. Forget all the government, media, fear, trying to constantly give you propaganda to keep you, you know, frozen so you don't do anything. Oh, but carry on spending. Oh yes, the economy's booming. Go out and be a good consumer. You know, this is the world we live in now. What can you do? Well, remember that I made that video. In fact, I've got it on the shared screen here. Yeah, here it is. 30 critical items. So it's called 30 items you need before a Great Depression. You can watch that. That will give you a really good indication for things that you can do to prepare. I've made a number of preparedness videos because look what happened just recently in Turkey. The earthquake that took place there, look how many people have died from that. Look what's happening in New Zealand at the moment. National emergency after the cyclone battered the North Island. And this is why I always talk about preparedness and being prepared. And also why I ignore the comments that say, oh, you're overreacting and having a bug out bag and plans like this is silly. Having food stored at home is stealing from other people. I just laugh at these comments. I ignore them, and so should you. Because if you think about people that are involved in earthquakes and natural disasters and things like this at the moment, and you think to yourself, if they just had some sort of plan, a backup plan, emergency plan, then they would probably fare a lot better than having no plan. And I can tell you, I have multiple plans for multiple situations. In fact, where I am living and coming to you right now from was a backup plan. The Isle of Man, where I live, was a backup to the United Kingdom. You see, I wanted to get out of the UK as I saw all of this come in a long time ago. You also know that I have lots of emergency backup plans for different scenarios. And I know some people think it's a waste of time and crazy conspiratorial kind of stuff, but actually it's completely logical. People have been preparing and even having some form of food storage for thousands of years. So I do find it funny when I read these sort of comments, but that would be a suggestion that I think you could do if you want to alleviate any of this anxiety or stress, if you even have it. Personally, I don't have it, but we are all completely different. Some people deal with stress in different ways. My coping mechanism is a strange one to most people, but I laugh about it because I find that laughing actually dissolves it for me, as opposed to when I didn't use to laugh about it, it would cause me a lot of stress. So however you deal with it is each to their own, as the saying goes. But that's really what I wanted to talk about today. I hope that updates you on everything going on. I hope that gives you a couple of ideas for what you can prepare. And really just try not to worry about it too much. If these things happen and it comes to pass, there's nothing we can do about it anyway. So other than that, thank you for watching the video. Take care. God bless you and your families. Stay safe out there, and I will see you tomorrow. Bye for now.